Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So this morning we're going to be reading one of the most exalted subject matters and sections of Srimad Bhagavatam. Some of you have been studying this subject for many years and know it well. Some of you have been studying diligently for the other 11 cantos since August to get to this point where you could address this subject. Some of you are just coming on it brand new, more or less, like Angela, who's a student at Santa Fe. Somehow by Krishna's arrangement, you're here for this most exalted section of the whole semester. So, anyway, I wanted to contextualize this chapter a little before we read it. So the topic of the Rasa Dance, which is on page 172, this comprises five chapters from the 10th canto, and it has the effect of being very controversial because it's so easily misunderstood. So therefore, I want to take a few minutes today before class and talk about this philosophically, and also explain that for reasons I don't yet understand, the flow of the Bhagavatam in this section, there are five chapters on the Rasa Lila, and then there are two chapters on apparently unrelated or mostly unrelated subjects, and then a final chapter about the gopi's separation from Krishna, which is tied in thematically to what we're going to be reading this morning. So when I was consolidating these chapters, I went ahead and put those additional three chapters in with the five that are really about the topic of the Rasa Dance. In other words, this chapter 10 comprises eight chapters of the 10th canto. Well, again, there are five chapters about the Rasa Dance, and then the following two chapters are seemingly unrelated. And then the third chapter after that is about the gopis' songs of separation from Krishna. So, to keep it as a whole, I included all eight chapters in chapter 10. Okay? But we're not going to read the last three this morning unless time permits, because the main topic is dealt with in the first five chapters. So, in terms of this book, we'll read from verses 1 to 128 and stop. And the other three chapters, unless again time permits, going on to verse 168, you can read those on your own, or we'll read them if time allows. So the main theme of this morning's class is about this Rasa Dance. Rasa, of course, means relationship. And as you remember from the previous chapter about the Gopi Vastraharana Leela, Krishna stealing the garments of the unwed gopis, they all wanted to marry Krishna, and Krishna promised them that their desire would be fulfilled in the coming autumn nights. So we read about the description of autumn in between, and we have now come to the point where this is taking place. Now, in the Bhagavad Gita, there is a beautiful description of this world, comparing it to a banyan tree on the edge of a lake. So a tree on the edge of the lake has the appearance of the original tree, but it does not have the substance. If you reach for an apple from the reflection, you'll just get wet. You will not get the apple that you're reaching for. So the world in which we live is compared to that reflection. It appears to be full of the juice that we're looking for, but we don't find it when we reach for it. In this connection, the Lord exhibits these pastimes of conjugal love. There are the five different relationships between the individual and God, as you know. What is the first one? Passive affection, also known as Shanta or neutrality, awe and reverence. Right, right. God, you're great. I'm small. Please protect me. Give me stuff. Then the second, Dasya, Ras, which is? servitude. So a more dynamic relationship. My dear Lord, please let me serve you. Hare Krishna, please let me serve you. Third relationship? Sakyaras, very good. That's friendship. Friendship, and in the relationship of friends, there is sometimes awe and reverence. There's sometimes service, but there's also a sense of equality, right? So the devotee can become so intimate with God that they're like friends, because God likes friends too. He doesn't have a social disorder. He, you know, likes to have friends and peers. Then beyond that is the fourth, which is Vatsalya. Very good. That is the parental relationship. Sometimes the parent has awe and reverence for the child. Parent certainly serves the child. Sometimes the parent befriends the child. But sometimes a parent tells the child what to do. So generally we think of God the Father, but in this connection, Krishna also likes to have parents. And his mother says, Krishna, it's time for lunch. Krishna, bring your father's shoes. Krishna, it's time for bed. Krishna, have you been eating dirt? So he also enjoys these relationships, only with the very intimate devotees. So then finally, the fifth relation. Yes. You have to ask our Sanskritists. I'm not sure. Okay. Not yet. Okay, so anyway, the parental relationship, and finally the fifth relationship, the topmost, is called Madhurya. Right, Madhurya means sweet, and it's the conjugal relationship between the lover and beloved. Now, there's two kinds of conjugal relationships. There is legal and illegal, or licit and illicit. The married relationship is called, you know this? Swakya rasa. Swakya means, okay, within the rules. This is legitimate. And then the illegitimate relationship is called parakya. Parakya is immoral in this world. So, getting back to the tree, the very top branch of the tree, in reality, appears to be the lowest part of the tree in the reflection. Right? So what we see in this world as illicit sex, immoral connections between men and women, is the lowest, most abominable thing. It brings down great leaders. It creates great scandals. It is damaging in so many ways to all that is wholesome and good in family life. And so all of these negative connotations are lumped on Krishna when people read these chapters, because here he is dancing in the night with the wives of other men. So I have heard personally many times people say, how can you worship this immoral god? So the inquirer in these chapters, King Parikshit, asks this question not once but twice to the speaker, Shukadeva Goswami. And on his own, Shukadeva also alludes to it in the course of the narration. It is therefore considered the most exalted subject matter. How is it that God can do these things and yet be unaffected? So ordinarily people cannot understand that. What we'll be reading this morning is not only the events themselves, but the explanation philosophically about how this is possible. Okay? Any questions before we start? Okay, yeah, in case we don't. Correct. Madhurya rasa. Yeah, there in Vaikuntha there's just this, yeah, awe and reverence. Maybe there's dasya also, but nothing above that. Yeah, awe and reverence is just, you're great, I'm small, give it all to me. You know? And servitude is, let me serve you. Okay? Yes, you're great, I'm small, let me serve you. Well, they feel helpless and passive in the relationship. Like, God is so great, there's nothing I could possibly offer you. Just prayers. Of devotees in the Shantarasa. Was Bhishma? I don't think Bhishma is listed there. I don't remember. There are some, but I don't remember. Okay. So, anyway, this morning is all about Madhurya Rasa. You're all elevated transcendentalists, so we're only going to, we're going straight to Madhurya Rasa. Okay. Chapter 10, the Rasa Dance. A call of love. As fall arrived, the springtime jasmine kissed the evening air, and Krishna schemed with loving dreams for his unique affairs. The moon adorned the eastern sky with soothing garnet rays, a husband bringing kumkum to his wife to dress her face. The moonbeams turned vermilion, lit the woods, and drew the blooms of reddish lotus flowers, which in turn shared their perfume. With pleasure, Krishna placed a bamboo flute upon his lips and played a tune the cowherd girls of Vraj could not resist. These gopis, busy milking cows or tending to their stoves, with boiling milk pots set on top and baking cakes below, found Krishna's flute song pulling them away from hearth and home to search the night with hopes they might find Krishna all alone. Some gopis served out dinner, others changed and nursed their tots, and others were still getting dressed. Regardless, they all stopped. As soon as they heard Krishna's charming flute, they ran away, their duties all forgotten, and their clothes in disarray. Their husbands, fathers, sons, and brothers, dashing to their doors, found out their wives and daughters had departed long before. Some gopis who could not escape and had to stay behind shut tight their eyes and thought of Krishna deep within their minds. These prisoners remembered Krishna, feeling great remorse. They thus wrapped up their karma that had yet to run its course. Their thoughts of Krishna deepened, and ecstatic feelings grew till they abandoned all respect for Vedic moral rules. Said Vishnuratta, they thought him their lover and their friend, not God himself who crafts the world and brings it to an end. How could these girls, their minds caught up in nature's ardent swells, get free of such attachment and its strong, deceptive spells? The gopis' lust is sacred, unlike that of common souls. As sages in their former lives, they practiced self-control and prayed to join with Krishna as his lovers or his mates. When meant for Krishna, lust, or even hatred, liberates. When Krishna meets the gopis and fulfills their heart's desire, he acts from great compassion, not the force of passion's fire. Since Krishna builds this mortal world in which we jivas fall, attachments that bewilder us don't bother him at all. For us, directing all our feelings straight to Nanda's son, the friendship, hatred, lust, or fear well known to everyone, will make the thought of Krishna fill our minds quite blissfully. For love of him, the gopis left and risked their chastity. The gopis arrive. On seeing all the girls appear, Lord Krishna feigned surprise. Dear gopis, what has brought you out beneath these moonlit skies? Are things well in the village? Why on earth have you come out? Dear slender waisted gopis, there are dangerous beasts about. You are walking through these fearsome woods with hours yet till dawn. Your relatives will surely be distressed to find you gone. Why cause your husbands, sons, and parents such anxiety? Have you left home tonight because of some emergency? Tonight you've seen the forest full of graceful, moonlit trees that lean and sway with blossoms in the fragrant, gentle breeze. Now go back to your husbands, for your calves and children cry. They wait for you to feed them milk and dry their moistened eyes. The best pursuit a woman can maintain throughout her life is service to her husband as a chaste and loyal wife. Or if you come tonight because you feel a love for me that usually slumbers in the living entity. Regardless, if you care about your futures, I suggest you serve and please your husbands, even if they aren't the best. Adultery is horrible. What trouble it creates. Unfaithfulness may keep your souls from crossing heaven's gates. So if you're feeling love for me, just hear and chant my name while worshipping my deity, as scripture has explained. To stand beside me here beneath this evening starry dome will not bring you the same results. Now please go to your homes. On hearing these unpleasant words, the gopis grew morose, for they could neither plead with nor give up their callous host. Their lips dried up from heavy breathing, tears rolled down their cheeks. They hung their heads and toed the ground and could not even speak. Although he had discouraged them, their love remained undimmed, for they were mad for Krishna and left everything for him. They wiped their eyes and stopped their tears. Their simple hearts provoked, they vowed within to stay with Krishna. Stammering, they spoke, "Almighty Krishna, why do you make such mean suggestions? For you we threw away our husbands and our possessions. O stubborn Krishna, you should show some reciprocation, as Lord Narayan does to one seeking liberation. You're everybody's dearest relative, friend, and spirit, yet you would send us all back home? We refuse to hear it. The sages steer their love to you, and we wish to follow. To live with troublemaking loved ones is hard to swallow. Until today, our household chores kept our concentration. Now you've distracted us and broke our regulation. How can we now return to live in that situation? Our feet refuse to move an inch from their new location. Your flute and smiling glance have kindled our heart's desire, and only nectar from your lips can put out the fire. If you refuse, our flesh will smolder in separation, and we shall have to reach you solely by meditation. Lakshmi can rarely touch your feet, yet you're here before us, some simple women who reside in Vrindavan forests. And once we touch your feet and relish that happy feeling, all other men become repulsive and unappealing. Lakshmi resides upon your chest, a unique position. Although the gods chase after her for their own provisions, she shares the dust upon your feet with your other servants. Is our desire to have that dust such a great disturbance? To worship you, we left our homes in a reckless fashion. O vanquisher of all distress, have you no compassion? O jewel of men, our heart ignites by your loving glances. We beg to serve your lotus feet in all circumstances. Your nectar lips, adorned with smiles that your glance expresses, your face, your dancing earrings, circled with curling tresses, your mighty arms and chest, where Lakshmi enjoys her leisure, all stir our hankering to serve you and bring you pleasure. Your gorgeous form has made the three worlds become auspicious. The cows and birds and even trees find the sight delicious. And when your flute pours out such sweet-sounding compositions, what woman anywhere can salvage her chaste position? As you appear among the gods to provide protection, you must have come to please us girls, not to cause dejection. Your lotus hands should stroke our heads in a calming fashion and cool our fevered, burning breath set aflame by passion. These sweet, enchanting words, all said in humble, helpless style, incited from the Lord of Mystics his most gracious smile. Though he himself needs nothing, Krishna saw the gopis' plight and set his mind to stay with them throughout that moonlit night. He smiled with teeth like jasmine buds, the gopis' faces bloomed, and they encircled Krishna like the stars surround the moon. When gopis, by the hundreds, sang his praise, the Lord replied, his presence was a garland, making all more beautified. They sauntered to the river bank and sat in cooling sands. As lotus-perfumed breezes blew, Lord Krishna's playful hands embraced the gopis, touched their breasts, and stroked their hands and hair. They laughed and joked, invoking Cupid's arrows then and there. Krishna disappears. The gopis felt so blessed to be with Krishna, they could not avoid becoming somewhat proud. In secret, each one thought, "Compared to time with Krishna, what is any treasure worth? Why, I am the most fortunate of women on the earth." Lord Krishna sensed the gopis' pride, and thinking it not right, decided to desert them, so he vanished from their sight. Now, after all, what better stirs a lover's tender play than offering a taste of love, than taking it away? When Krishna left, the gopis felt their joy evaporate. Tormented like she-elephants who've lost their loving mate, they visualized the joyous, playful smile of Nanda's son and madly imitated him and everything he'd done. In deep affection, unrehearsed, the gopis' bodies each repeated Krishna's movements, smiling, gestures, steps, and speech. So baffled by the shock of losing Krishna's company, some gopis, quite immersed in love, asserted, "I am he!" They loudly sang out, "Krishna, Krishna!" Rushing through the night, they madly searched Vrindavan's forests, looking left and right. Aware that Krishna, like the sky, pervades all entities, the gopis started asking for directions from the trees. "O fig tree, have you seen the son of Nanda pass this way? O banyan tree, he smiled, stole our hearts, and went away. Ashoka, Naga, Champak trees, has Rama's brother passed? His smile removes all vanity a woman could amass. O Tulasi, you love our Krishna, kindest of all trees, have you seen him walk by with swarms of nectar-seeking bees? O jasmine vines, you are bowing down. Did Madhava, in play, pass by and gently stroke you and delight you all that way? O mango, jackfruit, bail, and rose-apple trees, please tell us. You used to give your fruit so freely. Have you grown jealous? O tiny arka plant, abloom in this autumn season, have you seen Krishna? We are losing our sense of reason. O Mother Earth, what kind of penance have you accomplished? Your grassy hairs standing on end make you look astonished. Is this because Lord Krishna's footsteps tonight have graced you, like Vaman's footsteps, or Varaha, who once embraced you? O Doe, your widened, joyful eyes show you must have seen them, Lord Krishna's lovely arms and some lucky girl between them. We smell his jasmine garland's fragrance throughout the forest, and kumkum from the breasts of she who found him before us. O trees, we see you bowing low with your fruits and flowers. Did Rama's brother glance at you with his loving powers? His hand at rest upon the shoulder of his beloved, a swarm of bees around his garland which they so covet? O creepers, kindly verify our distinct suspicion that Krishna touched you. We can see it in your condition. Although you're wrapped around your tree husbands, you are showing goosebumps and quivering where creeper leaves should be growing. Exhausting their unstable visions, all the gopis sighed and, feeling quite discouraged, set their frantic search aside. But then, absorbed in Krishna, they began, impulsively, to mimic other pastimes he had shown them recently. One gopi played as Putana, the giant demoness. Another played as Krishna and sucked poison from her breast. Another played the demon who had hidden in a cart. Another, playing Krishna, feigned to kick it all apart. Another rendered Trinavarta, swirling round and round, while clinging to a Krishna gopi till they both fell down. Another gopi, thinking Krishna's infancy most sweet, just crawled about the forest, anklets tinkling on her feet. Two gopis played as Ram and Krishna. Two more girls deployed as Vatsa, calf, and Bukka, crane. In play, they were destroyed. As some portrayed the flute play and the sports of Nanda's son, the others watched and clapped their hands while calling out, "Well done!" A gopi placed her arm around a friend and then declared, "Now I am graceful Krishna," as she sauntered here and there. "And I shall fend off Indra's rain and wind," another cried, and raised her shawl like Govardhan so other girls could hide. One gopi climbed another's back and called, "This snake is dead," portraying Krishna's dance upon Kaliya's many heads. "I've come to punish demons," she announced. Another roared, "I'll save you from this blazing forest fire. Fear no more." One gopi stole some butter as a second gave her chase, then used a flower garland to bind up her slender waist. She said, "Now I have captured this elusive butter thief." The first gopi concealed her face and shed mock tears of grief. telltale footprints. The gopis, staging dramas and inquiring from the trees, then came across some footprints and exclaimed excitedly, "This thunderbolt and lotus bloom and other telltale marks confirm that Krishna walked this way and passed us in the dark." They followed Krishna's footprints, but were soon disturbed to see young lady footprints intermixed. They cried in agony, "Some girl and Krishna walked here arm in arm," this indicates, "like elephants who rest their trunks upon their loving mates. This girl has so pleased Krishna with her love and charming face that he forsook the rest of us and brought her to this place. In dust that Shiva, Lakshmi, and Brahma place on their heads, these sacred tracks of Krishna's feet confirm what we have said. These footprints cause us so much pain. Some girl came here alone to savor our unfailing Krishna's lips upon her own. And look, her footprints disappear. Our Krishna is so sweet, he must have picked her up because these creepers hurt her feet. His footprints sink more deeply now. It all seems very clear. Our strong, romantic Krishna must have carried her from here. And look, that clever boy walked over there and set her down, then reached up for some flowers. See his toe prints in the ground? Then, after picking flowers, he induced the girl to sit. And look, he sat behind her, here, so he could bend and fit those fragrant flowers one by one, embellishing her hair. I now crown you the goddess of the forest," he declared. The gopis had indeed detected Krishna's acts of love. "Dear king, you must remember, Krishna always stays above those stale and common acts of lust that merely please the flesh. He's fully self-contained. His love is selfless, pure, and fresh." The gopis grew bewildered as the evidence unfurled that Krishna had rejected them for one selected girl. But they did not see pride had also caused that girl to fall, when she thought, "He left others just for me. I'm best of all." Believing herself foremost of the gopis, she declared, "I've walked enough. Please pick me up and carry me somewhere." So Krishna crouched and touched his shoulder. "Climb aboard, my dear." In shock, the poor girl shouted out, for he had disappeared, "Oh, master, lover, dearmost friend, where are you? Are you here? Oh, mighty armed, your wretched servant prays you'll reappear." The other gopis, trailing Krishna, found their shaken friend, her lover's sudden absence far too much to comprehend. She said, "At first he honored me in many different ways, but I grew proud and then he left." The gopis were amazed. Again they followed Krishna's trail in hopes to reunite, but soon the forest thickened, blocked the moon, and hid its light. They acted, thought, and talked of Krishna following his tracks. The darkness quickly stopped their search and forced them to go back. Returning to the river bank, unmindful of their homes, in love they sang for Krishna in morose but hopeful tones. "So famed is Vrindavan since you have appeared, the goddess of fortune herself resides here. We searched everywhere, yet you hide from our view. Dear Krishna, please come, our lives hinge upon you. The beauty we find in your glance goes beyond a full-blooming lotus in still autumn pond. Your absence will kill us, we'll never adjust. Is this not the same thing as murdering us? You saved us when Kaliya poisoned the lake. You saved us from Ugga, that man-eating snake. You saved us from thunderbolts Indra let fly. Will you now abandon your servants to die? O heart-dwelling witness within everyone, you're more than your father and mother's dear son. You rescued the Yadus at others' request. Will you now neglect those who love you the best? When woes of this world drive a soul to your feet, your lotus-like hand make their fears obsolete. Your hand holds the goddess of fortunes," it said. "Beloved, please lay that same hand on our heads. Great hero, you free Vraja's people from pain. Your smile intervenes when your servants grow vain. Take us as your servants and show us the grace embodied in your lovely lotus-like face. Your lotus feet, Lakshmi's abode, absorb sins, yet chase after cows when the herd must go in. Your feet, which you pressed upon Kaliya's head, should favor our passionate breasts now instead. O lotus-eyed Krishna, your speech is so sweet, it captures the minds of the learned elite. Your words cause our ethical judgment to slip. Restore it, dear hero, with your pleasing lips. The words that you speak and descriptions of you will cleanse those who hear till their sins are removed. Compassionate persons who speak on such themes are gracious and worthy of endless esteem. Your smiles and sweet glances, the intimate games and private discussions we love to exchange, were pleasing, auspicious, and sweet memories. But now, our dear cheater, they're just miseries. Our minds grow disturbed when we think how you lead the cows to the pasture to forage and feed. Your soft lotus feet must be pricked by the blades of brambles and bushes that grow on the way. And when you come home, we observe that your face is coated with dust that the cow's footsteps raise. Your lotus-like visage and bluish-black hair awaken our minds to our loving affairs. Brahma serves your feet, which fulfill all desires. The jewels of earth, they are all one requires to meditate on in a time of distress. Please place those two soft lotus feet on our breasts. The sweetness that flows from your lips feeds our lust and renders attachment and anguish to dust. We envy your flute so strategically placed. Bestow on your servants that nectar-kissed taste. When we cannot see you, a moment appears to stretch in duration for thousands of years. Your loveliness shames the Creator, we think, for He gives us eyelids that force us to blink. Infallible Krishna, you know why we've come. What other deceiver would do what you've done? You walked out on us, though we gave up our men, to hear your sweet flute in the night once again. When we recall pledges you secretly made, your glance and your smile and the love they conveyed, or think of your chest, which is Lakshmi's abode, our lust leaves us thrust on a dangerous road. When you walk among us, we're happy and blessed, and every Vrindavanite sheds his distress. A drop of that medicine surely will ease the tormented hearts of your pure devotees. The ground in this forest, with stones and rough sand, is painful indeed for your feet to withstand. Dear Krishna, our breasts are both tender and smooth. Please rest your feet there, and we all shall be soothed. Krishna returns. The gopis, having filled their ears with songs of touching themes, burst into tears, for Krishna still was nowhere to be seen. O king, their sobs for Krishna, loud and long, reflected pain and eagerness to see him they no longer could contain. And when Lord Krishna, smiling with a lotus blossom face, returned to them, his yellow robes and garlands still in place, so pleased were they to see him once again that moonlit night, they doubted Cupid, god of love, himself could bear the sight. At once the gopis all stood up, their eyes all blooming wide. It seemed they had regained their life ere after having died. One girl put Krishna's arm upon her shoulder, leaning near. Another placed her hands around the hand she so revered. A slender gopi joined her palms in reverential mood around discarded betel nuts that Krishna had just chewed. Another gopi, burning with the flames of passion's heat, positioned her excited breasts on Krishna's lotus feet. Beside herself with loving anger, one girl bit her lip and glared at Krishna crossly, as if striking with a whip. Another stared insatiably at Krishna's lovely face, as mystics meditate on Krishna's feet with endless taste. One gopi looked at Krishna, took him in and shut her eyes, then held him tight within her heart, her dreams now realized. While standing there in ecstasy, the hair rose on her skin, and she became a yogi, fixed on Krishna deep within. Each gopi felt so pleased with Krishna in her special way, the pain he caused by leaving them appeared to go away. They acted like those common souls whose miseries abate as soon as an enlightened person enters through their gate. Encircled by the gopis, Krishna's luster shone so bright he seemed to be the super soul appearing in the night. They walked together on the shore, delighting in the breeze, made sweet with jasmine fragrances that brought in bustling bees. As autumn moonlight quelled the dark, the Jamuna, with hands of soft rippling river waves, made cushions from the sand. The gopis placed upon these cushions kumkum-covered shawls to seat their dearest Krishna, scripture's goal and friend to all. The Lord, who sits in every heart, sat too amongst those girls, and gleamed with an attractiveness esteemed throughout the worlds. The gopis rubbed his hands and feet, yet, miffed with what occurred, they mixed their playful smiles and looks with these uncertain words. Some people only love when they are loved by someone else, while others freely give their love and ask for none themselves. Still others don't love anyone, regardless of their mood. Dear Krishna, please explain to us these different attitudes. By making this inquiry, the gopis gave a hint they felt harassed and could not grasp the evening's incidents. Why did their lover disappear, inflicting so much pain? Lord Krishna understood their minds and smiled as he explained. Those friends who show affection but are self-absorbed at heart are not friends in the truest sense. They simply play a part in mutual self-interest. They would never show their love unless there was some profit they could take advantage of. O slender-waisted gopis, others love without concern for what they have to gain from love or get back in return. Such people may be parents, friends, or saints, but you can tell that they are truly friendly and wish everybody well. Still others don't or can't give back the love that they receive. They don't love friends or family, what to speak of enemies. Such people might be self-contained in spirit or in wealth, ungrateful, or just hateful toward those better than themselves. Sometimes I too hold back my love from people who love me, for that allows their love to build still more intensively. Like rich men who have lost their wealth, can think of nothing else, my devotees' unanswered love refines their higher self. Your love for me makes you detached from mere morality, the Vedic rules, your schedules, and even family. I left to make your love for me increase. Don't be upset. Did you believe that I could leave without extreme regret? A lifetime of the gods would pass before I could express how deeply I appreciate the love that you possess. Since you've forsaken all for me, what gift can I give you? Your glorious devotion in itself will have to do. The dance begins. The gopis heard these charming words, and casting off distress, enjoyed themselves by touching Krishna's ample arms and chest. Those jewels among women, linking arms in great delight, began to dance with Krishna in Vrindavan's moonlit night. As they began the rasa dance, each gopi quickly found that she was all alone with Krishna, dancing round and round. On seeing Krishna multiply, his arms around each neck, the gods and goddesses above flew closer to inspect. Amazed, the gods beat drums and threw down flowers in cascades. Gandharvas and their wives sang out Lord Krishna's endless praise. The chimes of bracelets, anklets, and the bells strung from their waists resounded as the gopis danced with Krishna face to face. Surrounded by the dancing gopis, Krishna seemed to be a sapphire set in most exquisite golden jewelry. The gopis sang of Krishna as they curtsied, twirled, and swayed, their hands in graceful motion, gestures, and their smiling eyebrows raised. The gopis' twisting waists propelled their blouses left and right. Their earrings swung in rhythm, though their braids and belts held tight. When gentle perspiration broke and glistened on their brows, they shone like bolts of lightning set in bluish, blackish clouds. The gopis' throats turned crimson, as if tinged with passion's thirst. At Krishna's touch, their songs of pleasure filled the universe. One gopi sang in harmony, and Krishna joined the fun. And then she deftly changed the beat. The Lord called out, "Well done!" Her hair and bracelets hanging limp, her energy all gone, one gopi held on Krishna's arms, which held a dance baton. Another gopi's shoulder served as Krishna's resting place. She thrilled to smell his lotus arm, adorned with sandal paste. A gopi placed her earring-laden cheek next to the Lord's, and took his betel remnants from his hand as her reward. Another gopi, bracelets tinkling, stopped to take a rest, and placed Lord Krishna's tender lotus hand upon her breast. Now, everybody knows that Goddess Lakshmi, Queen of Wealth, insists that Krishna spend his time with no one but herself. To find that very Krishna's arms around their necks that night, the gopis felt quite fortunate and chanted in delight. The perspiration on their cheeks and flowers in their hair combined to make the gopis' faces sweet beyond compare. As they danced on, their tinkling bracelets raised a pleasing tune in harmony with singing bees beneath the lustrous moon. Caressing and embracing them and dancing all the while, Lord Krishna showed the gopis love with cordial, playful smiles. Since they are all his energies, as is the Queen of Wealth, he frolicked like a child with a reflection of himself. My dear King Vishnurata, by the touch of Nanda's son, the gopis, overwhelmed with joy, began to come undone. Their ornaments and garlands seemed to scatter everywhere, and all their lovely clothes grew as disheveled as their hair. The goddesses in heaven were aroused to watch this dance. The moon and his associates, the stars, fell in a trance. Each gopi had her Krishna to exclusively possess, and Krishna, who needs no one, loved each gopi nonetheless. When all the gopis tired, Krishna kindly wiped their brows. His soothing hand induced their smiles, their love still more aroused. These smiles enhanced their glowing cheeks, their earrings, and their hair. Again, inspired by Krishna's touch, their singing filled the air. Their hugs crushed Krishna's garland and left marks of kumkum red. Aware of their exhaustion and their fevered limbs and heads, Lord Krishna led the gopis to the Jamuna to swim, just like a lordly elephant brings wives to bathe with him. As elephants might trample fields and paddies carelessly, the gopis and the Lord ignored mundane morality. While playful gopis splashed Lord Krishna, laughing out of love, the gods thought him majestic and rained flowers from above. Refreshed, the Lord emerged into the floral-scented breeze. Surrounded by an entourage of lovely girls and bees, he strolled among the forest groves along the riverside as if a drunken elephant carousing with his wives. Despite the host of gorgeous gopis at his beck and call, the self-contained Lord Krishna had no lust for them at all. He went on with his pastimes through that perfect moonlit night, itself an inspiration of which every poet writes. Astonished by these topics, Vishnurata quickly asked, "Lord Krishna, God himself, had just descended for the task of setting Vedic principles to govern human lives. How could he break a moral law by touching others' wives?" Lord Krishna, the self-satisfied, the Yadu family's jewel, proclaims, protects, and follows every single Vedic rule. It seems he acted shamefully. Since you are so devout, please tell us what he had in mind and satisfy our doubt. Transgressions of the Vedic rules that tarnish you or me do not taint Krishna or the gods with immorality. The actions of such deities are free of any fault, as fire cleanly burns dry wood and makes no smoke at all. Such great souls come for us to see, but not to imitate. Their actions far exceed what we can do or contemplate. Though Shiva drinks a sea of poison, we can't drink a sip. Can we then dare to mimic Krishna's pure relationships? We need not try to imitate what great devotees do. We simply need to follow them and hear their words of truth. How could Lord Krishna's action bring a consequence to him when those who simply follow Krishna cleanse their hearts of sin? The devotees of Krishna, so agreeable and pure, are wise and potent yogis with no karma to endure. So how could Krishna, God himself, who comes at his sweet will, be less than his devotees, or be somehow unfulfilled? What fault is there for Krishna, who resides in every heart, to take the gopis with him to the woods to be apart? Since Krishna has created us, the gopis, and the rest, what sin occurs should he embrace a gopi to his chest? When Krishna comes before us in his true identity, his pastimes draw devotion from each person that he sees. Why, even all the gopis' husbands felt quite satisfied, for Krishna's maya made them think their wives were at their sides. The dance went on 1,000 yugas, till a hint of dawn at last led Krishna to advise the gopis to move on. The gopis, leaving Krishna to return to home and hearth, preserve these secret pastimes in their unpolluted hearts. Now, anyone who faithfully recites or hears these words of Krishna and the gopis and how everything occurred shall gain both love for Krishna and the wisdom of disgust with ordinary sex affairs that spoil the heart with lust. That is the Pala Shruti, the blessing given at the end of this section. So, there's so much to discuss and so little time. Let us cover a couple of points, and if there's any short questions. If you would, please turn back to page 172. Look at the very first verse, the very first line. Do you see anything unusual about that? On page 172, verse 1, a call of love. Yes. So this is how the chapter begins. It's fall. Remember, we read the description of autumn. But the springtime jasmine is in the air. And this is so subtle. I read through it 100 times before it finally occurred to me. It's fall, but the jasmine's blooming like it was spring. So what this is saying is Krishna is setting up this very special arrangement for this night. And, you know, he can call the spring or the summer, whatever. It's also some of the trees that are usually blooming at other times of year are blooming on this night. Let's see. Then if you... then we turn to page 181. I wanted to point out one other verse. The bottom of the page. The last verse. The words that you speak and descriptions of you will cleanse those who hear till their sins are removed. Compassionate persons who speak on such themes are gracious and worthy of endless esteem. Anyone recognize that? Yeah. That's our verse of the month. Bhavakatamrita. Bhaktajivana. Okay. Now, one more major point, and then we'll just open for discussion. At the beginning of the chapter, the gopis are all running out, hoping to be alone with Krishna. When they hear the flute, they drop everything because they want to get there first. They want to be sure to have Krishna all alone, to search the night with hopes they might find Krishna all alone. So that was their motivation. But when they got there, what do they find? There's hundreds of other gopis. But still, they're satisfied. They're happy to be with Krishna. And then they start feeling proud. Oh, we're the most fortunate women in the world. And then Krishna goes. And then they're brokenhearted, looking all over. And then they find Krishna's footprints with this one gopi. And they're very jealous. And they're thinking how Krishna's left them for him, for her. And then they find her. And she became proud also. This, of course, is Radharani, but her name is never mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So Krishna left all the gopis to be with her, but then she also became proud, and he left her. So then they're all together singing these songs of separation. This is the plot in the summary. So when they started the night, they were all competing with each other. And when Krishna left them all, they all came together. And then they're all singing songs of separation from Krishna. And then, when they're all of one mind and one heart, then Krishna reappears. And what does he do? He manifests himself so each one of them thinks, I have Krishna alone. So this is the point. When we are acting independently trying to please Krishna, well, I'm going to please Krishna better than everyone, then Krishna is not so pleased. But when we come together and try to please Krishna together, then Krishna makes every one of us individually satisfied, just like we wanted. See? So this is one of the underlying themes of this chapter. It applies in a greater sense in, you look at all the religions of the world, how they're, you know, all killing each other. We're all killing each other. My God can beat up your God. You know, everyone's saying, if everyone would just realize there's one God and all religious people work together, that would actually please God. So in a broader sense, it has that interreligious theme. So any comments or questions? Yes, Stephanie. Yes, it's like...
That was nice. And there was something else that I was... I forgot what I wanted to ask. There's something else that struck me a minute ago. I don't know.
I have a question about 120. It says, transgressions of the Vedic rules that tarnish you or me do not taint Krishna or the gods with immortality. Immortality. Is that the Jiva gods? Or not Jiva gods I'm talking about.
He does talk about gods, demigods.
Does that surprise you? Yeah, it's... And he gives the example of Lord Shiva. Yeah. But in the section, he actually says the gods are above. So it's just like the king can. Yes, but I mean, you can study in more detail there if you look at the original, but that's what he says. He does definitely make that clear. The example is given of a king who makes the laws, and the laws put people in prison. The king may go to visit the prison, but he's not affected by the laws. Okay, other G?
When I was hearing the part where there were hundreds of gopis, somehow, I guess from looking at the pictures of the Rasa dance, I never envisioned hundreds. And then there's the 108 principal gopis, and then maybe I was thinking those were the gopis at the Rasa dance. So what makes the 108 gopis the principal gopis? Like,
I don't know. The 108 wives, yeah. But I don't know. Right. No, they're different. Okay, was it?
So it is surprising to see that Radharani's name is not mentioned in this whole Rasa dance pastime, though she is the topmost gopi and the original gopi of Krishna. So Acharya explained that Sukhdev Goswami is an ardent devotee of Radharani, and he's afraid that if he takes her name, he will faint and he will not be able to speak any further. So that special gopi who went with Krishna is Radharani. That's what Acharya explained.
Very interesting esoteric point. Good.
You were talking about earlier how a lot of people have criticized this whole pastime of Krishna. And I guess I understand why it's okay because for Krishna to be involved in it. But isn't it still immoral for the gopis to be doing this?
No, it's not, because they're... motivation is this love. That's what I was trying to explain earlier at the beginning of the class. This madhurya ras, or love of God and conjugal affection, is the complete expression of love of God. A lover can have awe and reverence for the beloved, certainly can serve the beloved, can be friends with the beloved, can tell the beloved what to do, but then the conjugal exchange is the fifth and defining element. So the full spectrum of relationships is found in this Madhurya Rasa. So as explained earlier, these gopis were previously great sages who did great austerities and meditated, praying to have Krishna in this relationship, praying to be his wives or lovers. And after lifetimes of great austerities, then they got this special relationship with the Lord. Again, we have to remember that Krishna consciousness is all about pleasing Krishna. And Krishna is pleased in a variety of ways. So he likes these relationships. All the enjoyment that men and women can have in this world, that is that something that is independent of God that he doesn't have or he can't experience? You see? So he is... He reserves, though, these higher relationships for very completely pure devotees. And that's why this is considered the top section of Srimad Bhagavatam, the most intimate. And again, on the reflection in this world, it's the lowest thing. So the very highest thing in the spiritual world is the lowest thing. There are Christian saints who talk about having God as their beloved. See, so this is not unique to our tradition. But it's not, nowhere is it played out as fully or explained as thoroughly as here in this section of the Bhagavatam. Yes, Clayton.
Just believing the Christian saints, loving God, a correlation in Christianity is St. Teresa in ecstasy. Have you seen the sculpture it's somewhere in Rome, I think. But it's actually, I think Michelangelo sculpted it. And St. Teresa's like lying down and like looking up and her mouth is open and she's like in ecstatic pleasure and there's like an angel piercing her with like a lightning bolt or something that's supposed to be like the pure love of God that she's being pierced with.
St. Teresa, that she wrote like this, right?
Yes.
I didn't hear Nandakumar what he said, but maybe this answers the question. Why isn't Radharani's name mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam? The Rasa dance lasted 1,000 yugas. That's a really long time.
So much for Saturday creeping party.
Go ahead, Chaitanya.
I just had a question. The age that Radharani was Krishna, this is before the sex desire was in the heart. Is this true?
Their age?
Yeah,
the age this is going on, is this before puberty?
Yeah, before.
Yeah, Krishna was 8 or 9 years old at this time, right? Yeah. Right. That's also true. Right. That's right. Okay. So, yeah. All right. I hope you enjoyed that elevated, that attempt to discuss these elevated topics. This is the only place this really comes up in great detail in Srimad Bhagavatam. So, Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Yeah. Prasadam ki jai. Yeah. Sarya Vijajal, the Tendriya Taiko, Divi Pili.